Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for DebtWire Municipals. Today's podcast title is California Wildfires, Risk Reassessment. I'm joined by Greg Clark, head of Muni Research, and Stephanie Fagnani, curation editor for the team. We'll be discussing the recent spate of wildfires in the Los Angeles County area and the potential for changing the risk profile of municipal credits in wildfire zones. So first, Happy New Year, Greg and Stephanie.
Happy New Year to you too, Paul.
Happy New Year, Paul and Stephanie.
Unfortunately, we start this new year with these wildfires that have been going on for almost 2 weeks in California. Stephanie, give us a sense of the situation over there.
The devastation has been actually incredible. It's one of the most destructive natural disasters in Southern California history. The California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection has been issuing daily up-to-date tracks on what's been going on. And currently, over 40,000 acres have burned. Over 12,000 structures have been destroyed. Mostly things are taking place in Los Angeles County in three specific areas and fires. The Palisades fire is the largest in terms of acreage, with almost 24,000 acres burned. And that fire is currently only 22% contained. The second largest, accounting for 14,000 acres, is the Eaton fire, also in Los Angeles County, and that one is only 55% contained. And I've seen reports that indicate that although that one is smaller in terms of acreage, that one accounts for more buildings actually being destroyed. And the third one in Los Angeles County is the Hearst fire, which has claimed 800 acres, and that one is currently 98% contained. There are two others also active right now. In Ventura County, there's the Auto fire, which accounts for 61 acres. That's almost 85% contained. And the Little Mountain fire, which just occurred yesterday in San Bernardino County, is completely contained, and that's accounting for 34 acres of damage. So it's quite extensive. What we've been seeing in terms of estimates on total damage and economic loss are pretty varied right now. But on January 8th, the day after the fires broke out, AccuWeather had already pegged the damages at between $52 billion and $57 billion, which is kind of incredible considering that was only one day after they started. Those estimates were actually increased on Sunday the 12th to between $250 billion and $275 billion. And that's where AccuWeather currently stands on its estimates. We've also seen other estimates for total damage and economic loss from JP Morgan, which placed that at $50 billion, and Moody's Investor Service, which placed damages at $8 billion. Of course, as these fires continue to burn, I wouldn't be surprised at all if those preliminary estimates are increased. And they take into account the damage and destruction of homes, businesses, damages to utilities and infrastructure, costs of rebuilding, relocation for people whose homes have been destroyed. There's a lot of things that are being collected to come up with those specific estimates. And in terms of how it's impacting the municipals market, I've heard from some sources that the increasing frequency in these types of catastrophic events are adding more risk into what is typically seen as a lower risk market, meaning the municipal bond market, which could have some impact on investor decisions in the future. For example, investors are not used to expecting a high yield here because there's supposed to be less risk in this market. And, you know, if they're not compensated for that risk in some way, they potentially might not invest in bonds in those areas going forward. Also hearing from people that in terms of credit downgrades and stuff, the federal government usually has been a pretty strong partner in past recoveries from certain catastrophic events. And the only problem that might occur, perhaps, is if there's a delay in the reimbursement process itself. Delays could affect, for example, utilities' financial liquidity as they work to rebuild. And utilities may also face new capital requirements that could impact leverage as they implement resiliency measures and work to repair their infrastructure. And Paul, I know you've also been talking recently to some muni bond analysts. What have you been hearing?
Well, Stephanie, been hearing a lot of different things, actually. And First, I want to set the backdrop to this conversation because, yes, this is about the municipal market, but I think this generally applies to anybody who's a homeowner or who is a citizen, that they should take an interest in what's going on here. Because if you think about municipal bonds and what we do, a lot of the credits are cities, municipalities, or state governments that issue bonds that are backed by taxes. And in the case of local governments, specifically property taxes. So obviously there's a direct connection to, if buildings burn down, how quickly are they rebuilt? Who's stepping in to help with that rebuilding process? Like you mentioned, the federal government, state government, what happens with insurance companies? There's a whole lot of things going on at play. And obviously the muni market is a low risk market. No question about that. There's not a lot of defaults. I think the central question is whether or not we're looking at a situation of incremental credit deterioration. And that's typically in the muni market where you start to see situations where they become very problematic over a period of time. So it's never one event. It's always 4, 5, 7, 8, whatever that number is at events. And then the bottom drops out. And I haven't been hearing that there's a bunch of defaults coming, but I have been hearing a lot of questions. Because if you think, last August, we had the Maui wildfires. And some people in the market thought that those wildfires would cause a rethink, a reassessment of risk. But that didn't happen, for whatever reason. Because typically, if you're looking at it from a risk perspective, one would think that there's a climate risk premium that starts to get built in to these spreads. We haven't seen that. There's no evidence of that. Nobody's saying that's an issue. And originally, we were just looking at credits that were going to be affected by property tax revenues. But there's also been a sector in the last couple of days, and I should point out that we are recording on the morning of Thursday, January 16th, and this is a fluid situation. So obviously, whenever you get a chance to listen to it, there may be new developments. But a development in the last couple of days is, on Tuesday, S&P downgraded Los Angeles Department of Water and Power's power systems bonds 2 notches to A, and their water systems bonds to AA-. The reason that's significant is that usually when these catastrophic events happen, the rating agencies will come out with comments saying that they're monitoring the situation and they'll make an assessment over a period of time. They didn't hear, and the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power is also known as LADWAP to those in the market. LADWAP was planning to come with a bond sale. That bond sale got postponed. I'm sure that the bond sale will happen. This is not the end of the world. But it is interesting to see that that development took place. And I just want to read one comment that they gave that I thought was instructive in terms of, like, thinking about this issue moving forward. The lowered rating also reflects potential contagion from power system risk in a stress scenario, including possible pressure to maintain lower rates if the power system is required to materially raise rates to fund wildfire liability claims or other rising costs, including energy transition costs. So in my conversations with different market participants, ranging from bond insurers to analysts to real estate professionals and others, everybody is waiting to see what the property and casualty insurers are going to do. They've already been dropping coverage. One would expect that premiums are going to spike in these areas as well. In terms of, when I say these areas, in wildfire zones, that the premiums will spike. So if you think about what happens with these wildfires in terms of the damage, typically you expect construction to become a necessity in about a year. I mean, obviously it's a human tragedy. There's some time to assess what you want to do. So in general, I've been hearing that it's 3 to 5 years to rebuild. And most of the homes that were affected were in affluent areas. Lots of second homes. Again, doesn't take away from the tragedy. I'm just stating the facts in terms of that it was in mostly affluent areas, with the exception of certain places like Altadena and Pasadena in California, where they have lots of quote unquote $1 million homes, but those homes are more in the $1 to $2 million range. And one may say, well, that's still a pretty sizable range in terms of the value. But the challenge becomes those folks that are in those $1 to $2 million homes may not be as willing or financially able to wait out the rebuilding process. A great example was literally when I was on the phone with a real estate contact. He said he had just seen across his table a $4.5 million home. Someone made an offer for $750,000. And these are the kinds of things that you're going to see in this sort of situation, because it is very unique, particularly to California, because there's a lot of barriers to rebuilding. There's the regulatory hurdle that you face. There's the insurance costs that I've already mentioned. And then there's construction costs in terms of material and labor. And one interesting thing I've found about in these conversations in terms of looking at risk and reassessing it moving forward is that in many affluent neighborhoods, they have mature tree-lined streets. And because of these high Santa Ana winds that were being experienced, those same trees became a weapon to accelerate the spread of the fire. Now, I'm not saying don't have trees, but I am saying that this is now a different risk that you have to think about and how you're going to mitigate it. So the last thing I'll bring up is that I think it's very important to point out that historically, municipal credits have shown tremendous resiliency after catastrophic climate / weather events. Private insurance, insurers of last resort, such as state government-run insurers, and FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, have all stepped in to make these governments whole and to help out homeowners to rebuild. So as a result, like I stated, municipal credit spreads have not incorporated a climate risk premium. But the last thing I'll say before I move it on to Greg are there's certain questions that we need to think about as we look at the increasing frequency and intensity of these catastrophic events. How many times do we rebuild in a hurricane zone? How many times do we rebuild in a wildfire zone? How many times do you rebuild in a tornado alley? How many times do you rebuild in a flood zone? Is there money from whatever sources to fund these costs in perpetuity? And I didn't mention other things that happen, such as drought and such as snowstorms, which are part of life. So these are all things we're thinking about, because it does seem like we're moving to an inflection point where there will be some sort of risk premium incorporated, but we'll see. But Greg, you were doing some work specifically on lease revenue bonds and similar structures, really lease revenue bonds and certificates of participation, in terms of we have local government units in California that leverage those structures on a regular basis. What were your findings when you took a look at that?
Let me introduce the topic a little bit more, Paul, before I get right into that. First, in terms of the scope of the damage, as Stephanie said, anyone who's been following the situation knows that the damage from the wildfires has been not only to the city of Los Angeles, but to other area jurisdictions as well, such as Malibu. And of course, when you're talking about damage to the city, you're also talking about damage to properties in the Los Angeles Unified School District and Los Angeles County. Now, most of the news we've seen has been on people who've lost their homes. And as Paul said, we don't want to sound as if we're insensitive to that. But for purposes of this discussion, we're focusing on the impact of the fires on muni bondholders. So the first things that come to mind as borrowers that could be affected are hospitals and universities, for instance, that have sold bonds. If they're unable to operate, there's no revenue, or there's greatly diminished revenue. There's also, of course, general obligation bonds. How much of a given borrower's tax base will be lost due to the fires is something that no one knows at this point. But as Paul indicated in his comments, I'm going to speak in particular about what are called abatement bonds in California. These are lease revenue bonds and certificates of participation that are subject to abatement risk, abatement meaning the risk of non-payment. The city, Los Angeles City, and other local governments could see partial or total destruction of public projects that were financed with lease revenue bonds. Now, among all the properties that Stephanie mentioned were damaged or destroyed, I forget how many thousand there were, there seems to be a pretty good likelihood that some of these are going to be public projects that were issued with bonds of some type. And if they were financed with lease revenue abatement bonds, in the state of California, unlike most other states, these types of bonds carry abatement risk. The borrower, the obligor, has the right to stop paying debt service in whole or in part if the project financed with proceeds is similarly entirely or partially unavailable for use. So if the building burns to the ground, you have the right to not pay because the building is unusable. If the building is damaged to the point where you can't, where you can only use 75% of the project, you have the right to pay only 75% of debt service. I'm going to burden everybody with a little bit of legalese because I think that's the best way to illustrate what we're talking about. And this is from one of the official statements for, I think it's the City of Los Angeles lease revenue bonds. I'm sorry, it's the county. The county's obligation to pay base rental, meaning debt service payments, is subject to abatement during any period in which, by reason of material damage to or destruction or condemnation of the property, there is substantial interference with the county's right to use and occupy any portion of the property. Failure of the county to pay base rental, again, debt service payments during any such period, shall not constitute a default under the bond documents or the bonds. Now, the risk of non-payment on abatement bonds is typically mitigated by the obligor's maintenance of 2 years rental interruption insurance, which is intended, of course, to pay debt service in the event of abatement, and a property or property and casualty insurance in amounts that will either repair the property or call outstanding bonds. But as Paul noted, the insurance companies are going to be undergoing significant stress as a result of wildfire losses. So the good news is that because lease revenue bonds and similar securities such as certificates of participation are essential to the financing of the state's infrastructure, these types of obligations are issued not only by local governments, but also by the state. The state and its subdivisions have historically made every effort to not abate debt service payments on lease rental bonds when natural disasters occur. What's different this time, and again, I am not forecasting defaults, I'm just saying that this sector needs a reassessment, is that the magnitude of possible damage to public works caused by the wildfires, combined with what will be the diminished financial situation of local governments, are the reasons for the reassessment. It's a situation that has not happened in such a widespread way before. That's all I've got.
Greg, this is why I consider you the E.F. Hutton of public finance. That thorough and precise explanation you offered, and how you had to correct me at the beginning because you had to let me know you need to give people the full context. I appreciate that.
Paul, the only comment is that by citing E.F. Hutton, you and I are showing our age.
That's absolutely right, but that's okay. Greg, Stephanie, thanks for a great discussion on wildfire risk and credit quality. I'm looking forward, well, I have to be clear, I'm not looking forward to more wildfire catastrophes, but I am looking forward to the dialogue on how this subject evolves over time. And to our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, or subscribing to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on the Muni Lowdown.